Hello, listeners and viewers. This is Ron Stefanski live in Detroit, talking to you and getting ready to start off another exciting episode of Disrupt Ed, where you know the drill. We talk to the seemingly ordinary people who are making an extraordinary impact out there in the world of disrupting education as we know it. And why is this so important? It's because our students are moving into a 5G wired, workforce augmented, technology interconnected, globally interdependent, AI accelerated, Web3 immersive, pandemic interrupted world of work and learning. We have to help our students along. And, you know, as you do that, I don't know if you remember Mr. Rogers on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And whenever there was a lot of chaos going around, he used to always say to kids, look for the helpers. And that's kind of how I see our next guest, is you look for the helpers, and Phyllis Hillwig is right among them. And she's one of the helpers that is propelling a lot of student success by virtue of her passion and her purpose in the area of math education and tutorial services. So, and we're going to talk about her startup and why she feels this is so important, because it's a pretty exciting approach that's really showing real benefit to a lot of students out there who are struggling. Welcome to the show, Phyllis Hillwig. It is so great to finally have you on the show. Great to see you.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you so much for allowing me to come on this amazing podcast, and happy to talk to you and those listeners.
Well, you know, Phyllis, let's start from the beginning. You started telling me about your origin story, and you started out being so deadpan. I think I was still laughing when our conversation was over, but I said something about, what do you think is the chief challenge in teaching kids math, which is your subject area of tremendous expertise? And you said, well, the thing is, Ron, you don't need to be Chinese to be good at math, even though I'm Chinese and I'm good at math. I just thought that was hilarious. You have a very, plucky way of saying things and obviously engaging students. So let's talk about where this all began for you and why you got into math in the first place and helping students and how you found your way here.
Sure. Yeah. So I'll just make one little minor correction. I am Chinese, and I wasn't always good at math. I think that my point is that anybody can be good at math, just because most Asians, you know, people think, oh, well, they're good at math. In my case, I actually had to learn to be good at math. It wasn't something that was very natural to me. A little bit of my origin story. So my family immigrated to the U.S. when I was about 2.5 years old, from Taipei, Taiwan. So English was not my first language. And so the reason I was more interested and excited about math was really, it was a comfortable place for me. I didn't really have to write or read or speak. It was numbers. And so I gravitated towards math because it was just a kind of an easier transition for me as a non-English speaker. And so that was that. And I always found comfort with the numbers, and it wasn't always easy, but I did enjoy that process. So I became pretty good at it. I helped neighbors and tutored some friends, and I really enjoyed that part of it, like just helping people that I knew figure out and solve problems. And so I decided to become a math educator, even though I went into school for engineering initially, because I thought that was the thing you do, right? You're good at math, you're good at science, good at engineering. And I've always just felt like, well, you know, I really enjoyed helping kids and helping people, helping my peers. And so I then decided to go into education. I went to school in New York City for my master's in ed, and had a concentration, which was urban studies. So I worked in New York City schools, and fell in love with the underserved community, really. Kids who, you know, like my kids, I'll just say, you know, if they needed tutoring, they had access to it, right? I could pay for it. They had lived in an environment in a location that had good instruction. And sometimes, like when you're in an underserved community, that's not always the case. And so but when you find out like how eager and how passionate they are to learn, you know, it really, the potential, the sky's the limit, right? So fell in love with teaching, fell in love with the urban community, the underserved community when I was going through school, became a high school math teacher, taught for a few years, then went into educational publishing because my professor at the time, I was getting my doctorate, was writing a book and asked me to help him be a editor for the book. So I went into educational publishing, editing sixth grade math textbooks. And that turned into a 20-year career working in educational publishing, and built a lot of products, not just mathematics, but products that really help kids want to learn things. I think that's the biggest challenge these days, Ron, is that our kids are very distractible. There's every possible distraction you can think of.
There's all kinds of distractions, right? Social media, friends, everything that's going on around them. And it's hard to keep them, centered on the, prize, right?
So going back to the educational publishing, the products and services that we, that I help lead and create were really centered around student experience. Yes, they have to learn the content, but they actually have to be meaningful to students. And then ran that business for a while and then, decided to do something on my own. I missed the entrepreneurial piece of it. My parents were actually very entrepreneurial. They started a Chinese restaurant. I grew up working in a Chinese restaurant. So if you see a little kid sitting there in a Chinese restaurant, that was me 30 plus years ago. But yeah, so I've always enjoyed kind of the startup messiness, creativity piece, and started a math tutoring company that was focused on really all the things that I believe in with respect to instruction and teaching mathematics based on products developed, students I've taught, you know, et cetera. And it really boils down for me three things. One is you got to have student engagement. They have to love coming to tutoring or learning, right? Because if you don't have that, forget it. So the other thing is when you're having fun and you really like it, the brain research tells you that your dopamine levels are high. You're ready to learn. You want to do things. So I tell my tutoring team, the kids, I want them to run into tutoring. I want them fall in love with math. I don't want to just have them get through it or put up with it. I want them to fall in love. I think the second thing that we really believe in is it's got to be hard. It's got to be a little challenging, because if it's challenging, then, you know, your brains are growing. You know that growth happens quickly and more substantially with challenges. I mean, if you think about, you know, some of the hardest things you've ever done in your life, you probably learn a heck of a lot along the way, right? You make a lot of mistakes, you're building your grit, your confidence to solve difficult problems. And so, you know, guess what? Like these multi-step problems are all over those state tests. And I think what we see sometimes is when we try to help kids along, we kind of cripple them in a way because we make it too easy.
Advocate for rigor in this whole equation. And I, you know, I had a recent example with Dr. Cesar Mickens, who's my co-host on some of these shows, and he'll be joining us in this series later on to talk about his educational experience with the underserved. And he and I were waiting to have a meeting with a principal in the Detroit Public Schools. This is a number of years ago. And a student was waiting to see the principal. And that's, you know, never a good thing, right? And so Cesar cannot not engage a student. So, of course, he goes up to him and says, "What are you doing here?" And the kid says, "Well, I think I'm going to get a detention." "Is why are you going to get a detention?" He goes, "Well, because I was a cloud trying to steal a car." And this was in the days when you could actually hotwire a car, right? And so he had figured out how to do that, but then he got caught driving out without a driver's license. And so as Caesar's engaging this teenager, I look and he's got this book that's all wrapped in duct tape, really thick book. And I said, "What is that?" And he says, "Oh, these are my games." I said, "Your games? Can I see that?" And it turned out that he had retrieved a physics textbook from the trash in the library, and he was using it as a game to work out the end of chapter problems in the book. And that was his idea of a game. And I said, "Oh my gosh," you know, and Caesar and I put two and two together and recognized someone who's got the skills and the cognitive executive functioning to figure out how to wire a car and could figure out these math and physics problems, needed to be more rigorously engaged in his education. And so within days, we had him registered in AP Physics and AP Math, and he went on to college. And, you know, we kept tabs on him up until he left for college. But it's a classic story of making sure you're more rigorous, not less rigorous, if you want to bring kids along. You don't have to pamper them. You don't have to dummy the subject matter down. You just have to engage them to say, you can do this. I remember one of the teachers talking to a group of girls who were in her classroom, and they said, I'm not really good at math. And the teacher had a classic line. She said, not yet. She didn't say, oh, I know, it's hard. You know, you'll probably not need this later on in life. No, she said, not yet. Meaning that at some point, if to your earliest point about why you were successful in math is you were not comfortable with it at first, but you got comfortable with it. You spent time with it. And guess what? Now you know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the rigor and the challenge is even harder now because we live in an instant society. You know, back in my day, I remember like if I wanted to use a telephone, I had to wait my turn. You know, it was a phone in the kitchen, right? And if I wanted to watch a TV show, it had to be, you know, it's 9 o'clock on ABC. And I got to wait till 9 o'clock ABC to watch the show. And these days, everything is instant, right? I want to watch a Netflix show. I can watch it any second of any moment, any day. If I want to talk to somebody, I could just pick it up and go. And so because of these distractions, this instant peace that people are used to, we think learning should be instant. We think solving hard problems should be instant. And we are taking away the joy and the fun that comes with solving hard problems or doing difficult things.
There is a satisfaction if you figured out something that you originally didn't think you could.
Sure. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to the teachers now. They are channeling a lot, and it's not been easy. So I can understand if they're like, hey, I just want to get through this lesson. I just want to make sure my kids are as successful as possible. And maybe the easiest way to do it is just to show them. So I totally get that. And or there's a standard I got to get through. Like there's problem solving and thinking takes a lot of effort and time. So there's definitely, you know, it's challenging in a traditional classroom, which is why I think we have such privilege to do this work in the tutoring sessions, because they are smaller groups and we can have more time to do more of this deeper thinking, productive struggle, individualization, and for the kids. I want to go back to, you know, two or three things. One is, you know, I said the Yuriki, it's got to be fun. We want the kids to want to do it. I think the second is it's got to be hard for all the reasons we just talked about. And the third is we got to make sure we are measuring things, right? So that we know that the students are actually getting somewhere. And I don't mean to test them to death, but it's also like, hey, you know, even asking them, like, do you feel better about this work that we just did? Did you enjoy your session? How engaged were you? You know, if I were to give you an exit ticket, how would you feel about that? Like, you know, just making sure that we have some quantifiable metrics and qualitative metrics to demonstrate our worth. And what I mean is, like, you know, as a supplemental provider or helper, as you say, in the tutoring space, it, you know, money is tight. ESSER is gone. And so the players who are going to stay around, whether it's us or anybody else, has to show the return on investment spent on tutoring. So if I'm working with these four kids, I want to make sure that my principals and teachers, kids also, that this experience has helped them grow and learn and get more confident. And if it translates to test scores, which, you know, often it does, fortunately, you know, but it's a good thing. But we are more interested in, actually, I'm more interested in helping kids fall in love with the learning and the process, because guess what? You got to do that for a long time. We're working with kids in second grade.
That's self-sustaining. That builds a lifelong learner when you do that. That's absolutely, you know, that's absolutely right. We need students to stay engaged. You know, you were talking about the cultural differences earlier and being an immigrant from China and how that factored into your education. You know, when we look at other countries, China certainly among them, but we also look at a lot of other countries, where they're surpassing us consistently in math and science. And when you look at how you're approaching tutoring, how does that factor into it? You know, because we're putting kids on a global stage now. We're no longer, you know, looking for them to get a job down the street. In many cases, kids are going to move hundreds of miles away to get the job of their dreams. So how does it factor in to have, you know, and what are they doing that we could take out of their playbook to improve our outcomes beyond two?
Sure. So yeah, no, slight correction. My family would hate me if I didn't say it. I'm actually from Taiwan, but like certainly Chinese background and many, many Asian families, you know, invest heavily in just making sure that the education is a non-negotiable, right? And if you look at tutoring spends in Asia, it's a given. They just spend, the families spend the money to get the extra help and support and the tutoring. And so it's just one thing that you do. It's something that's really, really critical. A lot of it is family engagement. That is one thing that I've also said to the schools, especially my underserved ones, that where is my sleeping giant? And that is the family, right? Because you get the kids for 2 hours of math class every day, but the families have them, you know, the other 8-10 hours, you know, right, when they get home from school on the weekends, et cetera. So, you know, that family piece, if you unleash the dragon, can be very, very helpful to you and to the kids. So I think that could be why, you know, there's a big delta in the what you're talking about achievement, where it's not just what you're getting in school, but it's all the other, you know, supports and family is a big one. Right. And so when you say, you know, well, how do you do that? Because many, you know, we know that sometimes in the underserved communities, the families might be working three jobs, or they might be difficult for lots of reasons. Maybe they don't feel comfortable with the content themselves or, you know, and I think part of it is just helping with, you know, providing resources, even asking questions like, hey, what did you work on today? Right. Or even immersing yourself. I always say to families, like, you know, just make math a everyday language. Right. Oh, my friend's coming over at 5 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock. How much time, you know, like. Or sorry, they're, it's 5 o'clock and they're coming over at 8 o'clock. Like, how much time do I have between when they're, you know, when they come over? Or, you know, I'm going to go get pizza and it costs so much money. Like, do I have enough to buy soda and snacks? Right. So if you immerse even the little kids, like I would challenge the little kids, like, I bet you can't walk, you know, 500 steps between here and the kitchen. Right. And they'd say, yes, I can. And then they go do it. So I think it's like just making it fun and making it, you know, like deliberate in introducing mathematical thinking and language and just every single day's activities, it increases a lot of the number sense and contextual understanding of where numbers come from and how they interact, right? You could, you know, a very simple example, as you said, with the kid that you interviewed with Caesar, you know, this kid who has a whole box of games or a book of games. I mean, he was clearly doing the math, but in a way that makes sense to him. And we just need to help kids do that. Find the information, the context that makes sense for them.
Makes a lot of sense. So Phyllis, you've been successful launching your project with tutoring services called Eureka. Tell me about what you're seeing in terms of making strides with some of these classrooms. I'm hearing great things. I want to hear it from you, though. How are things going out there? Because I'll tell you why I ask this question is because one of the things we're coming to is a better appreciation of the metrics that are out there. And we're learning more about what's working. And at the top of the list, when it comes to moving kids forward, especially underserved kids who are behind the eight ball, you know, tutoring comes to the top of the list as something that's very effective at changing the trajectory of that student's learning. So what are you finding out there in the field and in the classroom?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when I first started Eureka, it was August of 2019, about 4 months before the pandemic. So when I started the tutoring business, the idea was to be a center-based Kumon competitor, where like kids would come in, And instead of doing worksheets upon worksheets, they would be playing basketball and doing hopscotch and shooting darts and solving math problems while they were doing it. So I always make fun of it as like, you know, Disneyland meets tutoring and having a really good time, that student engagement piece, right? And then 4 or 5 months later, COVID hits. And so the center-based model was not always going to work, but we did bring the engagement and the fun and the rigor to the online version. And we are doing lots of tutoring virtually. We also have brought it into the school community. And, you know, when I first started out tutoring, I was driving around personally to 3 or 4 of my friends' houses that I begged to let me tutor their kids to learn the business. And they thought I was all nuts, but hey, you know, fast forward 5 years later, we're working with thousands of kids across multiple districts and cities to help them increase and catch up. In addition to the catch up part, Ron, as far as underserved students being multiple grade levels behind, we also work with the kids who are right there at the cusp and pushing them further out. Because the other piece sometimes is we don't pay enough attention to the enrichment, like the kids who show up every day in these underserved communities who want to learn, and they're constantly being, you know, not neglected, but just the attention is not on them. And eventually the kids do fall behind. So what we want to do with them is to say, hey, you can be pushed. You are showing up. You're doing second grade math, but we're going to give you third grade math. And what happens is when you start the enrichment conversation, the other kids are like, well, wait a minute, what is that kid doing? Like, why is my kid and not in that third grade group in second grade? And you start to build that enrichment culture, which, you know, every high performing school has some level of enrichment culture. And so even it oozes out into the teachers like, oh, I didn't think those kids could do that. Or even the parents like, oh, I didn't know my kid could do that. So it's important to also use tutoring for an enrichment perspective as well as a catch up. But back to your question around, you know, how are we doing this, and tutoring has been proven effective. Absolutely. Research shows that high impact tutoring, and defining that means they are getting a consistent tutor for a minimum of 90 minutes a week using school state curriculum lesson planning that is tailored to standards, that has a plan for the students, measurable, actionable steps. That does improve and grow students better and faster than any other intervention. And we know this, Ron, just because, like, you know, if you're a middle class, upper middle class, or upper class family, if your kid falls behind, what do? You get a tutor, right?
You get a tutor,
you go
right
out there and you pay Absolutely. Somebody to help your kid out. So, like, and why do we do that? Because it works, right? Or, you know, if you want to get a better SAT score, right? This is a lot of the controversy behind the best predictor of SAT score is a family income. Because they can get the, you know, the tutoring and the supports needed to get that kid to the higher level of achievement, right? There's also other conversation around bias, but the short version is tutoring, when made available, and it's not always affordable or available to students who are behind. And therefore, when you put that in, then it, of course, the potential for that should help them, right?
Or as we continue to bring more disruptors on to Disrupt Ed, I'm really excited, Phyllis, that you've agreed to join us for a series of conversations about how to lift student achievement in this post-pandemic era. You know, as Caesar is often want to say, he'll say, you know, we didn't think about learning loss until it came into the suburbs and until it came into white communities. For many years, we've had learning loss among underserved populations and those who are Black and brown. And so we have to look seriously at where those gaps in achievement are and how we can accelerate them. And clearly, tutoring and the work you're doing is powering that along. Any last minute thoughts you've been to our listening and viewing audience? You've been listening to Phyllis Hillwig from Yuriki, talking about the importance of tutoring and the importance of shifting the paradigm in how we teach math. Any closing thoughts, Phyllis, before we kick off this episode?
Yeah, no, I first thank you for listening. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I think that the pandemic, unfortunately, happen, and we had a lot of learning loss. But you're right, what Caesar's right, that this is not new as far as underserved communities being, left behind or having lower scores and so forth. What it has helped us do with COVID has helped, magnify some of the needs. And fortunately, I think tutoring will survive from a larger scale perspective, especially in our urban and underserved communities. And that I am very grateful for. I'm glad that the kids are now seeing that as an option to help them scale more than they have before. Yeah.
So to our listening and viewing audience, we ask only one thing, that you continue to get disrupted with us. What do we mean by that? Tell us what you think. Give us your feedback. Join the conversation about how we help more kids get excited about math, how we get them more excited about their learning, how we continue to propel their engagement and turn them into the lifelong leaders they deserve to be and we need to have in a growing, disrupted economy. Phyllis, thank you so much for the work you're doing, and thank you for joining us. And I can't wait to have you and Caesar back to talk more about this. We are not done with you, Phyllis.
Thank you so much. I'm excited, and have a wonderful afternoon weekend.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you to our guests and listening audience out there. Stay with us. We'll have more content and more lessons to follow.